is the Talent Talk podcast, the official podcast of Morehead State University Athletics. I'm Cassidy Stearman, and we're so glad you've joined us. A reminder, you can access this podcast on msueagles.com, the official website of Eagle Athletics, and a variety of other avenues, including Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also access archived episodes on msueagles.com/podcasts. This is episode number 2, and on today's show, host Matt Schabert talks with MSU softball alum Dr. Alexandra Nail Jeffrey. Dr. Nail is one of the newest inductees into the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame. A member of the softball program from 2007 until 2010, Nail still holds numerous single game, single season, and career records. She graduated with her bachelor's degree in microbiology in 2011 and went on to earn her master's and doctorate degrees from the University of Kentucky. Dr. Nail is currently a postdoctorate researcher at Kentucky, working on groundbreaking research on cancers. She discusses her time at Morehead State and now her current endeavors. That's on the Talent Talk podcast right now.
Welcome into the second episode of Talent Talk here at the Morehead State Athletics Podcast. And I'm really happy. I'm Matt Schabert, your host. I'm really happy to be joined today by our softball alumni and one of the newest members of our Morehead State Athletic Hall of Fame this year, class of 2020, Dr. Alexandra Nail. And thanks for joining me today and glad to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back to, well, first of all, as what kind of went through your mind when you got the call that you were or are going to be inducted into the elite class and be in the Hall of Fame at Morehead State, your alma mater?
I guess the first thing that went through my head was, oh my gosh, has it already been 10 years since I played softball? Because I remember just like it was yesterday when I would see Hall of Famers that got inducted when I was still playing. And it seemed like they were so far removed. And so it's hard to believe that it's already been 10 years since I stepped on the field. The second thing I think that went through my head was I had just pulled in to a grocery store to pick up my groceries on ClickList. And, you know, I just randomly got this call and I just got this big smile on my face because it just started out as an ordinary day. And, you know, it turned out to be an extraordinary day.
Definitely. And still after 10 years, it's hard to believe, you know, you're still in the record book, a pretty accomplished career here. But let's go back to like kind of how you got to Morehead State. Obviously, you came a long way originally from Montana. And so let's go back and just tell us a little bit about how you arrived at Morehead State and what was going through your head as you back then, as you started college quite a long way from home.
I had an unusual journey to Morehead. So being from Montana, especially at the time, women weren't highly recruited from Montana for, you know, really any sports. For softball, we're not known, such as like California girls, in terms of exposure. We don't get as much playing time throughout the year. And so we're not highly recruited from Montana. So it was up to me to send out letters to coaches across the country for Division I softball programs, because that was my dream in high school, which was quite a dream at the time, because in Montana, they didn't have a Division I program in the state when I was applying to places. So I had written letters to all the coaches. I think there was like 300 of them.
Wow. I did about 100 resumes when I tried to get my first job, so I can't blame you. You definitely have to work at it. when you're getting recruited.
It's a lot of work, and you know, especially I think I was 17, almost 18 at the time when I started this. you know, I was quite young, and it was overwhelming. And so I wrote all these coaches, and I think I heard back maybe from 15 to 20 of them. And out of those, they said, oh, you know, send us a pitching video. We want to see what skills you have. So, I sent 8 to 10 my video, and, out of those, you know, maybe 6 to 7 were interested. And ironically, Moorhead was not one of those places at this time. They hadn't even responded yet. And so my mother and I made the trip down to Tennessee. I was looking at various colleges there. And while we were down on that trip, Moorhead State called my mother's phone. And I think it might have been Jill Karwoski that called, but it could have been Gina Ramachi, which she was the assistant coach at the time. And they said, hey, we got your letter. You know, we're interested in seeing a video. And my mother said, well, actually, we're in Tennessee right now. we're in Nashville. And they said, well, why don't you come on up? You're only about 4 hours away. And so my mom said, come on, Alex, let's go see the school. We're close by. Why not? So we drove up to Moorhead, and I remember pulling into the campus, and I was thinking, like, boy, this is a small town. But I remember thinking, like, how beautiful it was with all the trees and everything, and it was kind of breathtaking. And this was in the spring, so, you know, of course, compared to Montana is very barren around March. Right. So at the time, Kentucky was very green and beautiful. And so we pulled up to the softball stadium, and the girls were practicing, and we sat down with the coaches, and, you know, they said, well, we'd like to offer you a half scholarship to come here. And so, you know, I was considering it, and they said, well, let us set you up with talking with the biology program, since that's what you're interested in. Let's have you get set up with talking to some professors from that program. And so, you know, we did this, and I went home back to Montana with my mom, and I kind of mulled things over for a couple weeks. And I looked at my mom, I said, you know, I know it's not the best offer, but I really liked Moorhead.
there is something about it. Said, I mean, a lot of recruits say that. It's we have recruits from all over, but you do really get something special kind of hits you when you see the campus here.
Yes. And I made just a really good connection with the professors, and I felt as though, I don't know, it just felt very warm and welcoming. So I decided to go there in the fall. And I remember it like yesterday, meeting my roommate, one of them being Sarah Funston. So she was 6'2". when I first got to my dorm room, she opened the door. I'm standing there with my mom, and I was thinking, oh my Lord, what have I gotten myself into? You know, how am I going to feel the pitch with this person? Like, she just looks so dominant and tall. I mean, the rest is really history.
So after, you know, you come here your freshman year, you a pretty good year of freshman season. But then, obviously, there's a coaching change after that season. So what was kind of going through your head as Moorhead State made the change? And sometimes I know that can be a good thing. Other times for people, it's kind of a daunting task. So what do you remember about as you guys made that change into the next staff?
I want to back it up just a little bit.
Okay, perfect.
So when I first started at Moorhead as a freshman, I was third, fourth string. Carrie Quinn was the senior pitcher. Sarah Funston was the top recruited pitcher. And I forget, we had another person that was pitching that I think later quit the team. But anyways, so I went in there, you know, knowing I had a lot of work to do, and I got really lucky my freshman season in the fall. We had a losing streak. We went into this fall tournament, and every game, I mean, we were having issues. And so I think it was the third game into the tournament, maybe fourth. And the coaches said, okay, Alex, you know, let's put you in. I remember being so nervous. My catcher, Corey Ellis, came out to me because I was just so nervous. And bases loaded, I think. There was no outs. I was like, oh, great. I'm just going to make this situation worse. And she said to me, well, it can't get any worse than this. We're already losing. So just pitch. And so I said, okay. And we miraculously came back.
Yeah.
We miraculously came back. And then the same thing happened the next game and the next game and the next game. So we kept getting behind. And then they would throw me in like the fifth inning. And then my team would like rally and they'd go crazy and they'd start hitting and we'd make defensive plays. And so we started winning. And so my freshman season, although, you know, we didn't have a great season overall, pitching wise, I developed a lot of confidence and I kind of earned a starting position. So now kind of getting back to your question. So when Jill and Gina said they were leaving, you know, I was like thinking, oh, great. Like, I mean, I hadn't even thought about this before. You know, I'm young. You don't get this sort of experience in high school. I don't think most high schoolers have a coach that leaves. And so I didn't really know what to think. And, you know, I had talked with my mother because I was back in Montana at the time. This was over the summer. And I said, you know, I'm really nervous. Like, I guess I'll probably just stick it out to see what happens the next year. And I got a call from Brian Hutchinson that summer. And he said, hey, you know, we're bringing a new coach on. Her name is Holly Bruder. And, you know, we've discussed it. And, you know, because of your performance last year, we'd like to offer you a full ride. And so, of course, like, I mean, I had been nervous, but then I was like, well, this coach, you know, she wants to help me out. She saw how much I improved over the year. And, so I was really excited actually going into that new season with a new coach. I felt like, you know, she had seen my worth and I thought, okay, great. Like she's actually following what we did. She's not just going to come in and try and start everything completely over. She's going to take what she has. She paid attention to what the history told her and she was just going to improve it.
Definitely. And as you kind of went into that second season, obviously they brought on Gary Potts, who was your pitching coach back then. And I was around back then. I remember thinking, you know, wow, he was admittedly quite a bit older, but had been a pretty good pitching coach. I think he had been with Coach Bruder for several years at Denison. So what kind of impact did he have? And I know Pauline was the head coach, but what kind of impact did Coach Potts have as you moved into that second season?
I mean, he had a huge impact. When he and Holly got into the program, they just totally changed our mindset. You know, one thing, and this is probably a kind of embarrassing, but we didn't know it. A lot of my teammates and I, we had no idea that we could actually compete for like a national championship at the Division I level. We thought that we were somehow like underneath that level. You know, every spring that NCAA World Softball Series comes on, and we didn't even know that we were competing within that, right? So that was one thing. That's a change in mindset. So with Coach Potts, he balanced out Holly with that intensity. He was very calm, composed, and he really worked on my mental game with me. And, you know, in addition to teaching me more finesse with a lot of the pitches that I had somewhat mastered at the time. And I mean, he was probably one of my favorite pitching coaches that I've ever had. And you know, I can maybe name three. I totally just loved Coach Potts.
I kind of lost track of them. I don't know if do you keep up with them. I did talk to Coach Bruder. Well, that's been a couple of years now, and I'm not sure. I kind of lost track with the others after they departed, and I don't know. Also, your teammates obviously some great teams that Morehead State had while you were here, and some great athletes, and I guess I see a lot of them on Facebook too. Keeping track. Are you able to keep track and kind of maybe even reminisce sometimes with your teammates from back then?
Yeah. So I've kept up a little bit with Coach Potts. I haven't talked to him in a few years, but he had moved back to Texas, I think, last I heard. I don't know what he was doing there, but and the rest of my teammates, yeah, I've kept up with a lot of them. Some of them we've grown apart, but we're still friends on Facebook, so I keep up with, you know, bigger events going on in their lives. I've had the chance to hang out with, well, I'd say probably four or five of them since we played. And yes, we definitely reminisce. We talked about how young we were and how we thought we knew so much when we didn't. And it's fun now because, you know, we have that bond. And it's really fun, especially when I get to see, like, and meet their families. And actually, one of my teammates, she was a senior and I was a freshman, Crystal. Her name's Crystal Nail now. Her name was Crystal Coleman. Yeah. She is my sister-in-law.
Okay.
So, yeah. Really yeah. Neat. So, yeah. So she married the oldest brother, the oldest of the Nail brothers, and I married the youngest. So that was sort of interesting. we didn't plan that. yeah. So it's been really just fun to reminisce with old friends that way.
Let's kind of talk about your career, you know, in your schooling after Morehead State. And there's, I guess, a saying, and the NCAA came out with this a couple years ago. I think it was something to the effect of not everybody can go pro in athletics, but majority go pro in other things. And you've been able to kind of, quote, go pro in your field of medical research. So tell me a little bit about that. And while it may go over my head a little bit, but it's definitely something that's extremely interesting, extremely unique. And you kept working at it, and you've been able to earn, and I mentioned the word earn because I know it was a lot of work to earn the title of doctor out there. And you stayed close to home here, or close to, not home, but close to your second home at Morehead State as you moved to Lexington and been able to settle in there.
Yeah, the path to earning my doctorate was long and grueling, but totally worth it. After I finished up with my bachelor's in biology at Morehead State, I actually stayed for another couple of years and did my master's of science. As a way to get some research experience and to bump up my grades because being a full-time athlete and a biology major, it was not easy. So my priority then became academics. After my master's, I received my letter of acceptance to the PhD program at University of Kentucky. And I worked in the lab of Brett Spear. And now I'm a postdoctoral researcher at UK, and I'm working in Dr. Jill Kolester's lab. And I'll try and make it, you know, somewhat simplified. But what we basically do, and what my projects focus on, are chemotherapeutics and in relation to rare cancers or hard to treat cancers. So the two focuses of our research are ovarian cancer and osteosarcoma. Osteosarcomas are more prevalent in teenage males, and they often are very aggressive, so they're hard to treat. And ovarian cancer, of course, is one of those cancers that a lot of people actually end up dying from because the treatments that we have now just are not where they should be. So what we focus on are developing new treatment strategies. So that includes new technologies to deliver the chemotherapeutic drugs, which that's one of my major projects. And I can't talk too much about the technology because it's currently being reviewed for patent.
still being looked at, right?
Yeah. We basically have a new technology that can take drugs that we currently use to treat ovarian cancer, and it can deliver it straight to the tumor. And you have less toxicity overall in the animal because it's being delivered straight to the tumor. And it also activates the immune system to start attacking that tumor. So that's the main focus of what I work on. The other thing that, and this is a little bit more experimental, not as clinical, is that we look at different types of chemotherapeutics that maybe aren't being used to treat a cancer. So for instance, if they're being used in one of our things actually comes from a tea extract in China. So that's not being used to treat cancer currently, but, you know, can we use that extract to treat the cancer, and then, you know, what happens? So that's just one example. I think, is that clear, or did I?
Oh yeah.
Did
definitely.
I make you more confused? Okay.
No, it's definitely clear. And I mean, that's incredible work, obviously, with cancer. Obviously, with any medical research, I guess, are you always learning something, you know, almost daily of as you experiment and as you try new things and what might work? It's got to be exciting to know that, you know, you could be at the forefront of something great as a treatment. But you also know, I guess, that you have to, a lot of it is trial and error, maybe.
Yeah, every day I'm learning something. And, you know, I actually credit my softball experiences for giving me the ability to be okay with failure. Not to strive for failure, obviously, but being okay with failure. And trying to figure out, you know, why did something not work? And because that's the essence of what I do in my job. You know, you figure out, okay, what's working, what's not working, what else can we try? And you continually improve. And so, yeah, every day I'm learning, every day I'm trying new things. Hopefully we don't get failure all the time.
Right.
But, you know, I'd say 90% of the time, you know, you have to tweak something, and 10% of the time it works every time. Once you figure out, you know, exactly what you need to do. So
have you guys had to do anything, and obviously not directly related, but with obviously the pandemic and everything right now, has there been changes that you've seen, or even things that might somehow be related to what you're doing that ties back into what's been going on, or have you had to change your protocols and anything that maybe for different things that deal with what's going on right now in the world?
Yeah, for a while, in relation to the COVID pandemic, we actually had a lot of our research shut down in the lab. So, you know, you weren't allowed to work on anything just because of the safety of, you know, all the individuals in an open lab setting. So a lot of the research got shut down for 3 to 4 months. You know, this coincided with my maternity leave. But, you know, I mean, regardless, our research really just got put to a halt. And the only thing that we were able to work on was really just clinical trials. And, you know, I'd say now our research has sort of been able to go back to normal levels, but we have different things in place to keep everybody safe. So, for instance, our workspaces are separated, you know, and we also have to rotate times in certain lab spaces so that we're not in close contact with one another. So, and, you know, even simple things as using the elevator, you know, only one person for elevator, and we're on the fifth floor. So sometimes we have to wait a while to get actually up to the lab. But yeah, it's definitely been a different time in research, but there's been more normalcy as of late, just because now we can actually resume what we were working on before the pandemic occurred.
You mentioned maternity leave, so tell me a little bit about your family, and obviously you've added a new little one lately. So in addition to working full-time as a researcher, you're now working full-time as a mom and wife too. So tell me a little bit about your family and how it's been with your new little one.
Yeah, so she's 4.5 months old. She's just the light of our lives. She's very happy. We're super lucky. She's a pretty easy baby overall. And I will say though, she's hitting sort of a stretch of reverse cycling in her sleep. So we've been both trying to handle that as best we can. We're both working parents. So, you know, it's sometimes, some days you're just really tired, but it's kind of amazing how much you can still, you know, do in a day, even though you're running on maybe 3 hours of sleep. You kind of just get numb to it. But, you know, she's just, it's all worth it. At the end of the day, you know, just to see her happy face and to come home. And my husband is just a joy to be around too. I think he was, and he has been just my biggest advocate. He wasn't around as much when I was playing softball, but he has just been so supportive of me afterwards. And I think he was the one that might have run the nomination campaign or something for me for the Hall of Fame. So he's just been just one of the best things in my life.
I think I do remember something coming in from him, because I do handle kind of the nomination process. And I remember, and we kind of go through each year and kind of identify some of the people that are up. You know, there is a 10-year window that after your eligibility. So obviously we were thinking of you as someone that would come up this year, but then I think I remember right before that getting a form that came in that, oh, I think he may be related to you. So good for him. He did his due diligence and put it in. Now, he was an athlete here too, right?
He was. The center for the offensive line, I think from 2007 to 2010. Maybe it was 2009. I'm not sure. He was a year behind me. Okay. So, yeah, but he played football there. And so did his brother, Jake Nail. I don't know if he was a center. I don't remember what position he was. And then their oldest brother, Nick, played baseball.
Baseball, correct, yep. So still keeping a whole Morehead State family, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess kind of one last thing before I let you go here is, as you look into the future, you're obviously there in Lexington, have been there for a few years now, but what do you think, or what is it looking like? Is it something that you could stay on where you're at and continue that career, or maybe it's looking at maybe a different research place or a different area? What is it kind of looking like for you?
Yeah, so a postdoctoral scholar position is a stepping stone position. It's meant to help transition you from when you finish your PhD to becoming a professor at a university. And so my goal is to become a tenured professor, get on a tenure track at a research university. So I'm about, give or take, a year into my postdoc position, even with the COVID research going on, the COVID pandemic going on, it's sort of put my research back a little bit, the timeline anyways. But I would say that, I probably won't be at this position more than a couple of years, a couple more years. And after that, I will be looking to apply at tenure track positions, assistant professor positions. And I do have my eyes set on U of L potentially, Cincinnati Children's, to try and stay in the area, stay close to my husband's family, especially since we have a growing family of our own.
We definitely have some, and I've done some stories recently on some of our alums that are at U of L and also in Cincinnati too, at that very place you mentioned. So a lot of opportunities for you, I think, coming up. So
I hope so.
Well, I certainly appreciate you joining me here on our podcast, and it's been great insight into what you're doing now. And I think you're doing some great things there at University of Kentucky and in your life, and proud and happy that we're able to induct you into the Hall of Fame. We will see how everything goes. We fortunately won't be able to do the traditional homecoming stuff this year, but we will find a time for all you guys to you along with Drew Lee from baseball and Coach Matt Ballard from football, and Casey Garland from volleyball, are Hall of Famers this year. So we will find a time to induct you and honor you probably coming up in the spring. So appreciate it again. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining me today.
It was a pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much for just discussing my overall path to where I am now. And it's always a pleasure talking with you.
Alrighty, that's Dr. Alexandra Nail, Morehead State softball alum and a Hall of Fame member of class of 2020. That'll wrap it up on our second episode of Talon Talk. So join us again next time as we look at more unique and interesting Morehead State alums. And as always, you can find this podcast on msueagles.com and social media and a variety of other avenues to listen to Talon Talk. I'm Matt Schabert, signing off. Thank you very much.